This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves, and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So, make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago, and loving Hyundai.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
And as you know, we are tech heads.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
And with the available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
I am happy to announce that Target Circle, the program we all know and love, now has automatic deals.
And with the all-new Target Circle being free to join, there has never been an easier way to take advantage of the most deals at Target.
When you shop in-store or online, Target Circle deals will be automatically applied at checkout, so you get the savings without lifting a finger.
And right now, you can sign up for Target Circle 360, which offers unlimited same-day delivery for just $49 for the first year of membership.
That's $50 off the regular price.
And when you pay with your Target Circle card, you can save an extra 5% your way every day.
Visit target.com/circle or the Target app for more details.
Same-day delivery is subject to terms. Applies to orders over $35.
For 5% discount, restrictions apply. See program rules in-store or at target.com/circle card.
Danielle, were you practicing your signature? Like a 13-year-old
girl? I can't believe you have to see that. I do that while we're doing the podcast. I just write my name over and over again.
Danielle Fischel Karp. I just love it. Like, she still has a crush on Jensen and she's practicing.
Danielle loves Jensen.
I do practice.
She wrote a little heart too. Like, cutest thing I've ever seen. That's and thank God it's not Lance Bass or Jonathan Taylor Thomas or any of the other.
At least I love my husband.
So funny.
No official Bass.
Whoa.
Oh my gosh, that's hilarious. Yeah, well, remember when we got to whatever convention that was a couple weeks ago and I was like, guys, I have a new signature. I'm gonna really take my time. That lasted 4 signatures before I was like, yeah. No, I just have a thing now that where I don't even really have control over what comes out of me with my signature anymore. It's just like the pen touches the paper and my hand does the same moves over and over again. And even if I wanted, like, for example, I have wanted to stop doing that exclamation point, happy face exclamation point that I do at the bottom of my name. I've done it ever since I ever started signing autographs when I was like 11 or 12 years old, and I want to stop it, and I can't.
You know, you can't. You just can. Yeah,
no. I can't.
You can just stop after the.
No, I can't change my signature now. No,
you can't sign my name, and it just happens automatically. And I'm like, oh, I wanted to not do that.
Yeah. By the end of the con, you can't even tell what my name is. Like, it just says like best wishes, Wendell Freeman.
super Phil Friedle.
Yeah, you just can't. You can't tell anymore. It's just a blur.
My parents, we were with my parents a couple weeks ago. Got together and we'd had like a whole board game weekend in this beach house. It was so fun. And my parents have this crazy thing that I don't know where they got it, but their glasses, like a goggles that you put on that turn the world upside down.
What?
It's like a set of mirrors. So you're looking through, but suddenly your feet are on the ceiling. It's like inverts the world, right? It makes you like it drives you crazy. And what you try and do is like try and write something and you can't, like, you cannot, like, you look down, which means looking up at what you're writing. It's so confusing.
Oh, God.
I could do is sign my name. It was like, I couldn't write, like, cause you try and just write correctly and you end up writing upside down and backwards. And so then I was like, no, I'm just going to close my eyes and sign my name and I could do it perfectly. So it's like,
wow.
Yeah, it's just automatic. You've got to try these things.
Just thinking about that made me nauseous. Yes.
You've got to ask your parents where they got that.
Yeah, it's the coolest thing. I mean, Indy put it on and could not take it off and was just what? God. Yeah, it's so weird.
Oh, that's cool. Welcome to Pod Meets World. I'm Danielle Fischel.
I'm Ryder Strong.
And I'm Will Friedle.
So when you film a 7 seasons of a TV show, episodes start to blend together a bit, as you may have already heard on an almost weekly basis with this podcast. And now, 30 years later, we have forgotten a lot of things. But recently, Will and Ryder bumped into this week's guest at a convention in Albuquerque, and they couldn't be happier to remember the sweetness that is Natanya Ross. She appeared in just one episode of Boy Meets World as Ingrid Iverson, the girl Corey and Sean decide to riz up for the big Christmas dance in hopes she'll become more popular.
Nice use of Riz.
Thanks. Yeah. Thanks, guys.
Put it right in the Wu-Tang Clan.
I was hoping you guys were going to notice. And in turn, she left quite an impression on the legacy of the show. And after visiting us, she went on to star in the Freaky Friday TV movie with Shelley Long and Gabby Hoffman. She appeared on The Babysitter's Club and Baywatch. And most notably, she was in almost 50 episodes of The Secret World of Alex Mack, playing Robin Russo. So now, all three of us are thrilled to be reunited with Natanya to talk not only about her guest appearance on Boy Meets World and the fact that she's the only proof we have that our school did indeed have a pool, but also we will chat about her life since we worked together and what she's overcome to be here today. Let's please welcome to the show Natanya Ross. Hi.
How is everyone?
We're good. How are you?
I'm good.
We were just discussing right before you came in how you ran into Ryder and Will at a convention last year in Albuquerque.
Yes, I did.
It was us and the Sandlot crew hanging out.
It was.
And
nothing else was going on.
And the Mighty Ducks. We had some Mighty Ducks there as well.
It was like us, Sean, and Marty, and there was nothing else to do.
Yeah, that's pretty much accurate.
I just got booked to do another one in the same place.
And I was
like, nice. In Albuquerque?
Yeah. And I was like, all right, I guess I'll go back. I mean,
the question really is, how fast can you spell Albuquerque?
Not fast at all.
No. Albuquerque.
Oh my God.
Boom. Albuquerque.
You practiced that just to be able to do that.
Pretty much. That's a party trick. Of course I did.
Yeah, that's a party trick.
It is. It absolutely is.
Okay, so let's start with our most basic question we like to ask everybody, which is, when did you get into acting as a kid?
6 months old.
No, really?
Yeah. That might be our youngest ever.
I think so.
You might beat Matt Lawrence because he's somewhere in the first year or year and a half, but you, 6 months?
Okay. Yeah, tell us about that.
I don't remember much.
What? What do you mean? I want to know every memory.
I don't remember much. My mom was just like very determined to make me into something, which goes into a lot of shit that happened later on in my life. But yeah, 6 months old, I was a Gerber baby. I was doing a bunch of commercials. And then I had like very, very, very small parts in Crimes and Misdemeanors and Awakenings with Robert De Niro and Robin Williams.
Wow.
Which was crazy. But then like the first, I guess, real recognizable thing, which really still trips me out that people even comment on this, was Little Monsters.
So you were in Little Monsters, which starred Fred Savage and had a cameo by Ben.
Yeah, I know. Crazy. I've never seen that, by the way.
I haven't either.
Oh my God. All three of them?
I don't even know if I've actually seen it all the way through either. But I was very young. I was 6 years old and I had this like 30-second little part. And that's really what kind of kicked everything off, when I think my mom and my team at that time, it's so weird to have a team at 6 years old, but they were like, yeah, let's try and take this as far as we can take it with this.
Let's take this show on the road.
Let's take this all the way. Yeah.
Our 6 years of investment have paid off.
I'm telling you.
So those are some pretty big sets to be on as a small kid. Yeah. What do you What is like your earliest memory of being on a set? What do you actually remember where you're like, I know I did those jobs because there's evidence of it, but like the first one I really remember is...
Probably I did like a Juicy Juice commercial in Canada. I remember that because we had to get on a plane and we were first class and it was this big thing and I loved it so much. But I think Little Monsters is probably the first set I really remember being on. I couldn't tell you like too much about it, but I have recollections of like what it felt like and what it made me feel like.
And what was that?
I was really cognizant even at that age that this was what I wanted to be doing. So although I have, you know, a little bit of a cliche child star story later on in life, I was never forced into it. Like I knew that I loved it even at that age. I just didn't know how much I was about to really love it like later on. You know, I just was like, I was like a rambunctious kind of big personality kid. And I was like, yeah, I'm on set. This is great. You know, and it didn't like, I think, penetrate my soul the way it did later on. But I knew I was where I wanted to be.
Wow. And so when you then made it to Boy Meets World, did Ben remember you? Did you guys talk about Little Monsters at all?
I don't think so. No. No, I don't think I brought that. I was nervous on set with you guys. And I was already on Alex Mack. So I was integrated into a set family too. You know, we were, I think, on season two when I did of Alex Mack, when I did Boy Meets World. So I remember coming in knowing the dynamic that you guys had probably already built together because we had that too. So I was nervous. I was like, I don't remember talking much to, anyone really, but I did talk to Ben the most for sure, but never about Little Monsters.
Wow.
Even later on, when we were, I don't even think I brought that up. I don't think he remembered.
We've never seen Little Monsters, but I have a question if anybody knows. Is it called Little Monsters because the kids are bad, like problem child, or are they actually monsters?
No, monsters. I think a monster under the bed or something that they've become friends with or something.
Oh, okay. All right. So it's not.
It's like a main monster too. Howie Mandel is like
the
main monster.
Gotcha.
Yeah. I should probably watch it too.
We should watch it. We should watch it.
Little Monsters.
Yeah, why not?
Oh my gosh. Well, you were also, you were also on a TGIF show. You were on Billy, the sitcom with Billy Connolly and Johnny Galecki.
Yeah.
So you were already, like, by the time you got to Boy Meets World, you were already like a TGIF staple. You were already on Alex Mack in second season.
Yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby. It's easy for us to strike up a streaming service or bust out a DVD to watch our childhoods, but for actual home movies, it's not that easy. That's why we want to tell you about our friends at Legacy Box.
Legacy Box is the safest and easiest way to digitize those old school memories you have as VHS tapes, stacks of pictures, or those little camcorder cassettes that you'd have no idea how to play now.
And Mother's Day is right around the corner. There's no better gift for the whole family than giving them a way to relive moments like a wedding day or your first steps or that time you fell into the pool at Uncle Rick's house on the 4th of July. The patio was slippery, okay?
Legacy Box takes it all. 15 different types of analog media, even photo negatives. They professionally digitize by hand right here in the USA and then send you back a thumb drive or upload it to the cloud, as well as return your originals.
We recently used Legacy Box to get some VHS tapes converted. Truthfully, we had no idea what was even on them. And we were thrilled to see one of them was my husband's first shave. His parents recorded it, and now we have this incredible memory to watch that we didn't even know existed. It was safe and easy, and it means a lot to us.
Join over 1.5 million families that have trusted Legacy Box with their memories.
Go to legacybox.com/world to save 60% during their best Mother's Day sale ever.
That's legacybox.com/world.
Danielle, tell us a little about your hydration style. Let's say you're thirsty. Are you chugging a glass, taking little sips, pouring it over your head like it's Flashdance? What's going on?
Well, we recently started karate, and the minute we get out of karate, we have been bringing our liquid IV, dumping it into some water, and I chug it because I am parched.
That is absolutely true. Well, I can tell you how I quench my thirst. Thank you so much for asking. It's with liquid IV.
With three times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink.
And eight vitamins and nutrients for everyday wellness.
It really does quench your thirst faster than water alone. And it tastes good.
And with no artificial sweeteners and zero sugar, it's your time to try it.
Flavor-wise, I'm partial to pear and green grape. It's a perfect way to hydrate before a big day, especially if you've been up late the night before, which, honestly, I never am, but I'm somehow still tired.
I like white peach. It reminds me of being classy, and I want to swirl it and comment on what year I think it was made, and I think it was this year.
And it's incredibly conveniently packaged. You can just carry it in your pocket all day and then add it to your water. Bingo. Tastes great, and your thirst is quenched, and carpe diem.
I've used it after our long flights to live shows, and it worked to make me feel refreshed and ready to talk about MASH.
However you hydrate, grab your Liquid IV Hydration Multiplier sugar-free in bulk nationwide at Costco.
Or get 20% off your first order when you go to liquidiv.com and use the code WORLD at checkout.
That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code WORLD at liquidiv.com.
Okay, so before we get into Boy Meets World, there is a movie that you did that I have to talk to you about. Because in doing research for this interview, I'm not sure this movie's ever going to leave my nightmares. So I need all the details.
Okay.
Munchie Strikes Back, the sequel to Munchie. And that movie, Munchie, starred Jennifer Love Hewitt. You were in the sequel. I want to show you the image of Munchie, the monster in it, because it's pretty crazy. It's a wonderful creature. And this is the official movie description. He dresses like a lounge singer, sounds like a stand-up comedian, and has magic powers.
Oh, terrifying. My God. How have I never seen this?
I love his cardigan. And I need to know every detail about this movie.
Oh, my God. God bless the 90s.
Exactly.
Wow. Yeah, that was... I don't even know what to say about this movie. It was like this weird little Roger Corman movie. I don't even think I auditioned for it. Just kind of like came across to us as an offer. And my mom was like, she'll do it. Yes. She'll do anything.
What was the character you played in it?
So I played the girlfriend
of Munchie.
No.
Oh man, I was going to be so excited.
We both went the same way. Like, oh my
god,
did
you have a love scene with Munchie?
That would be like so weird.
Having to kiss Munchie.
I was the girlfriend of like the main character, and his best friend was Munchie. But it was like an imaginary, like no one else could really see it. And yeah, I was just like his little girlfriend in the movie. And
what was it like with that? Was that puppet on set all the time? Did you have to interact with that puppet?
The puppet was on set. I didn't have any scenes with the puppet because like the premise of the movie is like only this kid can see the puppet.
Yeah. I love how Danielle's like, just assuming it's a puppet.
Well, it could
be a real guy.
It could be a real person.
Have some respect.
Just, yeah, seriously. You instantly just judge that young actor. Very nice, Danielle.
Sorry.
I have to say, with all the interviews I do, I've never once been asked about Munchie Strikes Back.
Man,
all
you know what? That makes me happy.
That's what Pod Meets World. That's our special touch.
Yeah, not every podcast kind of hits the level we do.
Right.
So we go right to the jugular of your career.
We try to get
the entirely forgettable 1993. Yeah, no.
I want to work with a puppet like that. Are you kidding me? That puppet is amazing. And he's wearing a cute cardigan. I love it. Okay.
The cardigan was a good look.
It's a great look. I mean, if you're a puppet, wear a cardigan. If there's one thing you learned from this interview, let it be that. So, after Munchie, you then came onto our set as Ingrid, who was a nerdy wallflower who Corey decides to try and make popular. Do you remember auditioning for that one? Or like, what was that process like?
I do. So I had auditioned for Boy Meets World a plethora of times for like all
it
sorts
seems
of
like
different.
Everybody, yeah.
That's the story. That seems to be the story. Yeah.
And this one was like really last minute too. They called me in like just a couple days before this was about to start. So I think I came in on a Friday and it was going to start on Monday. And it was like one of those times, and I have a lot of this, where they were like, the part is yours. Like, you're not even auditioning against anyone else. Just go in. They just want to see you read. And of course I show up and there's like 50 other girls there.
Of course.
And that happened on Alex Mack.
The same 50 that you've already seen at every other audition.
At every audition for like the last 10 years. So yeah, I went in and read. And I think as I was leaving, they called my agent and said, she got it. So then I showed up Monday to table read with you guys.
Yeah.
And what's crazy to me is the entire episode is you.
I know.
Like, you have so much to do in this episode. Yeah. I had forgotten that. Yeah.
Yeah, it's so crazy too, because I mean, obviously Alex Mack was such a big thing in the 90s, and that's, I think, what most of the fan base still like remains about. But this specific episode, I get DMs, I mean, it's nonstop about this specific episode, and I rewatched it, you know?
Yeah.
And I have so many thoughts about it, but I understand, I think, a little bit more now as an adult, why this episode resonated so much with kids at that time. Mm-hmm. And, I mean, aside from the fact that Boy Meets World is so special to so, so, so many people, it touched on so many different things. And as I rewatched it, it kind of like unlocked this core feeling for me that I had back then, where like this was very much art imitates life for me, without any of you guys knowing, without me, you know, saying anything like that. I very much felt like both of these variations of Ingrid. Mm-hmm. Like, I very much felt like the nerdy girl, the not attractive girl, the not popular girl, and then like with potentially the promise to like maybe be pretty or whatever. Mm-hmm. And it had been like ingrained in my head for so long by agents and managers of like, yeah, you're cute, but like, you're just not that girl, or you're not the lead girl, you're not the girlfriend, you're not any of these things. And Boy Meets World was kind of the first time I had the opportunity to like show both sides, you know? Right. But I remember distinctly when I was in that brown dress thing, whatever that was the worst.
Yeah.
And the glasses and the pigtails, that I was like, it made me feel so much like the outside was like showing how I really felt inside. And I was just kind of like embarrassed to be in that outfit, you know? And, and then also then when the makeover happens, I was like, am I even this girl? It was an interesting week for me, I will say.
Yeah. We recently rewatched it as well. And we also had many mixed emotions about it. You're, you know, sort of thrown into this situation where they're going to try to make you like more hot for Corey. And you never really give any input on it before you get the makeover. And then it is revealed that you like want to be popular so bad that you're like down for whatever.
That's the best moment of the episode.
Yeah.
I think. Yeah. It's like when you grab Ben by the collar and you're like, make me popular.
Yeah. And then it all kind of plateaus when you jump into the swimming pool at the end and you lose your cool friends because of it. And then at the end, you still ditch Corey for a more popular guy. So I say all of that, like, what, looking back on the episode, you're talking about when you rewatched it, the feelings it brought up for you that were mirroring your own life. What now, rewatching it as an adult, what do you feel about it now?
I mean, I don't know if it like ages all that well now, you know, but I it's almost, it's crazy. I can almost still kind of tap into that emotion, you know, where I think there is so much pressure on. I mean, I couldn't even imagine being like a teenager now, you know, I can't imagine it. And if back in our time, if all of the social media and all of the stuff that goes on now was happening then, I don't know that I would have like survived that back then, you know. But yeah, I think like looking back at it, you know, I was grateful for that opportunity because it actually, for me, showed some of like my team that I could do something else than just play this like weird, nerdy, you know, character. So I was really grateful for that.
Right.
So thank you. guys for that. But yeah, it just kind of brought back those feelings of like at that age, I had to learn very quickly, like, you better get okay with who you are as a human being. Like, and you better do it fast, you know? And unfortunately, that didn't happen for me till much later in life. But yeah, I mean, but it also brought back, like, I loved being on that show. I remember being so excited, you know, that I had gotten the opportunity to do that. But, you know, it's a mixed bag of emotions, right? Yeah. It's a mixed bag. So.
Well, do people still recognize you as Ingrid? Do people talk to you about Boy Meets World?
All the time.
Wow.
All the time. It's crazy. Like, even when I do conventions and stuff, there's always a Boy Meets World picture on the table. People just love this character, which is so special. And sometimes I get confused about it because I'm like, I was only on one episode, but they just love Ingrid Iverson. So,
well, I think it's a great character. It's like, I feel like in this second season, it's like you had your episode and then Danielle Harris did her Sister Teresa episode where she played Harley Kiner. And you guys like come in and the whole episode is about you. And it's like, they're the best guest stars. Like I've only watched the show so far up until the second season, but it seems like they're the best characters that we had, you know, like this, they're great roles. And you got to show this range. I'm fascinated by what you were saying. Like, you know, it's so sad that, I mean, it makes sense, right? That actors get categorized, right? Like when you're an actor, you get put into a category. You're like, the funny comic relief character, the leading lady, the whatever. And like, but for a kid, that's a different thing to internalize. You know, I feel like as an adult, you can say, because like there's a famous acting teacher in LA named, I think it's a Leslie Kahn thing. You guys know Leslie Kahn? Yeah. You guys remember her?
No.
And she teaches her actors to get up on stage and find their zero. Which is like, what do you present naturally? Like, what does your presence just sort of read to people? And so she'll actually have actors get up on stage and the whole class will be like, what, you know, and just say like, hi, my name is so-and-so. And then the whole class just judges that person and says like, I don't trust her, or I want to go on a date with her, whatever their like instincts will be. And then like the whole idea is they understand what your zero is, what you naturally present as, and then work for that or against that based on the character you're playing, whatever. But when you're a kid, like your zero is very hard to objectively like remove yourself from, you know, like I, as an adult, you can say like, oh yeah, I have a resting bitch face or whatever it is. And I can work against that or whatever, and you can just move beyond it. But when you're a kid, that's your entire identity. And I definitely felt that too. Like as a kid, whatever it is, whatever parts you get start to reflect how you feel about yourself. And it's hard to like turn that off or I don't know. But yeah,
I often wondered if it was different with child actors out on the West Coast than it was on the East Coast. Because when I moved out here at 16, even when I started Boy Meets World, you're still auditioning for other things. You're auditioning for films or whatever kind of in between. And the thing I noticed about LA was that it was always like, oh man, you were so great. Thank you for coming in. It was so nice to see you here. And you walk out like, wow, I did well. In New York, it was like, no, you're too fat. Sorry.
Yeah.
So you just by the time I was 11, I would walk in and they go, we asked for a redhead. Who brought this kid? No, thank you very much. And I'd get back on the bus and I'd go home. And it sounds harsh, but it made my skin so thick that it just wasn't about me. Like I was able to completely dissect myself from the fact that they were looking for something else. And at least they told me that to my face, even at 11 or 12. As opposed to what I would get when I came out here in LA, which is like, oh my God, you're so good. It was so great to have you here. And then they'd never call you because they didn't like you from the second you walked in.
Right.
And so I wondered, you know, I wonder mentally which one is actually makes you a stronger person and a stronger actor. Is somebody just kind of saying to you, no, not going to do a kid. You're not what we're looking for. Or, yeah, oh my God, it's so great. You're awesome. And then just not calling. So,
I mean, I think it depends on the kid, right?
I guess. But you have to adapt either way.
But either way, being a kid in that situation is difficult, right? Like handling that rejection or the acceptance of only one version of you, right? Like that you don't have the flexibility to be like, oh, I can be whoever I want as I grow up, you know? But, you know, and I mean, I think all of us in this group were actually pretty lucky. You know, there are other kids who were like extremely overweight or very short, you know, they had like a different look that only was acceptable as a certain type of character, right?
Sure.
Like,
sure.
And And that's all they could play for their entire, you know, and that has got to wear down on you in a way.
Natanya, what do you remember the things you were getting cast for? What do you remember that telling you about yourself and who you are? And like, do you remember being like, oh, I guess I'm this, I guess I'm that, because this is what everyone sees me as?
Yes, I do. I very much do. So, like after Munchies.
Yeah. I love it.
You know, I was doing like little episodes. I was doing Step by Step and just like all these little guest parts, always kind of as like the nerdy friend or whatever. And then I did like the middle version of Freaky Friday, again, the nerdy friend. And like just remembering being on set in the like glasses and the pigtails, and like they just love to put me in pigtails for whatever reason. And that was an interesting one too. I think that's when I really started to like pay attention to it, because we had Andrew Keegan in the movie. We had Marla. We had all of these people that were so cool. And I was like, wow, I am not that. I'm not that cool. And then I got Alex Mack. And
with Larissa Olenek, another one of our favorites.
Larissa, yes. So Alex Mack was like an arduous process for me. I had gone up for the sister, you know, quite a few times and took it all the way to test. Same with Alex, the part for Alex. Then they shot the pilot, recast the entire thing, brought me back. Same thing, sister, Alex, didn't get it. Got the call from my agent. They wrote a part just for you. All you have to do is go down there and read. I get down there to this same casting office that I had been to like 10 million times. And I was over it at this point. I was like, give it to me or not, but I'm not coming back after this. And 50 girls there, of course. But this one I ended up getting. But I remember the first episode I filmed, like instantly, you know, put me in this kind of weird, like her, the trajectory of her character and the growth of her character ended up being really cool. Like something that I really leaned into towards the end of the last couple seasons. But at first, you know, I was this 11-year-old kid and I hadn't really hit puberty yet. Yeah. I had very, very pale skin, bright orange hair, which, you know, that's tough. That's like a tough one growing up like that. And I said this on another podcast too, when you're 11 years old with bright orange hair, pale skin, just booked this series that we don't know if it's going to make it or not, but it has the potential. You don't know that you're just like a few years away from like, it's going to be okay. You're going to be pretty. You're going to be cool. Everything's going to be fine, but you just don't know. And the character was so weird. She was so like, I've said she's like the OG original alt emo goth girl of Nickelodeon.
Yeah.
And before this character, there wasn't representation of these kind of kids that dressed like this and felt like this. So, again, it was one more time where I was like, well, now I've accomplished what I wanted to accomplish. I booked a series and I'm like part of the main cast. I'm a series regular and this could really go. And I'm this weird kid again, you know? And so, but I had pops throughout where like I was booking these roles that weren't like that, like Boy Meets World, Babysitter's Club, like all of these different things that got me out of it a little bit. But even second season of Alex Mack, I would like run to my dressing room and put on like a little extra eyeliner or a little extra lip liner, something to like, you know, make myself feel a little bit better. So yeah, I definitely remember that. I mean, I was typecast for sure. Bad girl, nerdy girl, weird girl, goth girl.
Right.
Whatever it was.
Anything but the main girl, right? Like that.
Anything but the main girl, except for this one really weird movie I did in Canada with Chauncey Leopardi, where I played his girlfriend. Yeah. And I was like, I think I was 15 or 16 and so there, you know, there was pops of it. There was pops of it.
Well, don't forget Munchie, where you were Munchie's girlfriend.
You know, and then there's Munchie's Strikes Back.
Right, yes, Strikes
Munchie
Back.
Munchie 2, yes. Exactly.
Munchie's 2. Yeah. So yeah. I mean,
but the ponytail, the pigtail glasses thing was such a 90s trope.
Oh yeah.
It was tiny. Such a way. She can't be pretty. She's got glasses. Like, exactly. Wait a minute. She has a ponytail. Right. She can't be pretty.
Yeah, and a cardigan.
And that was just such a thing. Yeah, it was such a thing where it was like, and wait
on
a minute. Back,
they always had me like that until I forced them into different hairstyles, like middle of second season, where I started to like have more of a voice and kind of like advocate for myself a little bit more and be like, look, why is she always, come on, take them out. Yeah. Like, we can do better here, you know? Right. And they started to listen to me and kind of let me aesthetically lean into this character in a way that felt a little bit more comfortable. I mean, there were still the 90s chokers and the very 90s goth outfits and all of that, but the hair got a little better. Like,
right.
Season and fourth season, I just showed up one day to set, cut it all off, and I was like, now what?
Yeah, now what are you going to do?
I was so rebellious towards the end of it because I'd been put in this box for so long, but yeah.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
When it comes to Podmeets World, we're synonymous with two things: watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
If we could, we would take Hyundai to prom.
Technically, Hyundai is more visible on this show than Topanga.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to a 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
Say teched out again.
Nope, that was a one-time show. Snooze, you lose.
Well, either way, the Hyundai Ioniq 5 is a tech-forward electric SUV.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
So that means your car won't die out like the Matthews family vehicle on New Year's Eve, forcing me to miss out on kissing supermodel Rebecca Alexa in front of all of Philadelphia.
And with available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
It's 2024 and stress is already everywhere.
Deadlines at work.
Your kid's screaming at you.
Non-stop traffic.
The world is ending.
That's a big jump there, Ryder.
Yeah, sorry, kind of true.
Yeah, well, when we want to get away from the struggles of everyday life and have some comforting me time, we break into some Keebler Sandies.
Let's say it's finals week and Mr. Feeney has scheduled all of the tests into one day. How will Topanga find a comforting moment to herself?
Go to the mall?
Not with this hair.
Play guitar with her father, Jedediah?
Depends on which Jedediah.
Bite into some delicious Keebler Sandies?
Exactly. Keebler Sandies are buttery shortbread cookies made with simple ingredients.
And each Keebler Sandies cookie is baked to perfection by the adorable Keebler elves for a light sweetness and texture that melts in your mouth.
God bless those little Keebler elves.
When you need a comforting moment for yourself, Keebler Sandies is the perfect treat that will keep you going.
So, the next time you feel like you're juggling it all, reach for a Keebler Sandies shortbread cookie to enjoy a simple moment of comfort.
Tell the elves Pod Meets World sent ya.
They're real. I've seen them.
Well, you have been so open and inspirational talking about the struggles you faced in your teens and then it really finding its hold in your early 20s with substance abuse. Yeah. It's obviously something very common with young actors who find early success. And we were hoping that you could share some of that aspect of your story. When did drugs and alcohol enter your life?
So I was probably like 15, 16 years old when I started drinking and just, you know, smoking weed and doing like the things that we do as kids. And, you know, at these Oakwood parties, I know you guys will understand that reference. Every weekend, like the second I was done working, I would just jam over there and like party all weekend, but it was so innocent and young, you know, and felt very like experimental, and it wasn't a big deal. But, you know, when it started to get really rough for me was around 18, 19 years old. Mm-hmm. And one of the best like pieces of advice I could ever give is like, really be careful who you surround yourself with, you know?
Yes.
And I kind of fell into a little bit of a rougher crowd, but all actors. So mm-hmm. it felt safe, but it was like the next level of stuff that like was not going on at Oakwood. And, you know, I didn't come from a home life that had any structure. There was a lot of chaos and alcoholism in the home. Mm. And for me, being an actor was kind of like the first chapter of my life where I was able to like go somewhere and become somebody else.
Right.
Right. So like everything that was going on at home, like when I was on set, that was my safe place. That's like all I had for safety. Mm. So as I started getting 17, 18 years old and I started to look a little bit different and no one could really figure out what box to put me in anymore. And I was getting these kind of like one-off things like Baywatch and 90210 and like all of these things, but I was growing into more and more of a different look. And I cut all my hair off and dyed it like jet black and just rebellious, you know? And at a certain point, people were like, we're not really sure what to do. Like the red hair was the thing. And the less parts I got, the more, you know, I internalized that and was really with the wrong group of people. And yeah, I developed a gnarly little heroin addiction, which is, wow. You know, which is really crazy. Like when I think about how all of that went down and like how fast it happened. And now as an adult, understanding the disease of alcoholism and that it was inevitable for me, and it could have been any substance really. And this just happened to be the one that was introduced to me at a very young age, which again, it's like, be careful who you surround yourself with, but yeah. We know that at 17, like we don't know that at 18, when I'm just this young kid, I have all this money. I'm like kind of famous, hanging out with all these famous people. And someone's like, here, do you want to try this? And instantly it takes away like every feeling of self-doubt you've ever had in your entire life. And it instantly takes away all the pain of like coming from a very, from very tortured parents themselves. And it mm-hmm. instantly takes away all of these things. And it didn't matter anymore if I'd had pigtails and Alex Mack, or if I had, you know, glasses and Boy Meets World, or none of that mattered anymore. And, yeah, so that was rough. So I spent all of my 20s, you know, suffering with active addiction and then figured it out in my 30s and God bless was able to turn around. And I know it's like a very cliche child star story. Mom steals all the money at 18, girl gets strung out on heroin, blah, 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 blah. But also I think that what's not talked about enough too is that some people do go through that and then make it out.
Yeah.
It's right. Really cool. You know, that yeah. to me is like, because people are fascinated by this story of a young child star that had all this recognition and then is strung out on like what, you know, we would deem as one of the worst things ever to get involved with. Right. And, but what's not talked about more often is that some people make it out of that. And,
yeah.
and I'm trying to advocate for those people too, because a lot of kids that get f***ed up like that because of, you know, whatever it is, I don't want to blame it on child acting, because I don't know that that's really the cause by any means. But, you know, so yeah, so when I turned 30, and believe me, I had many bouts in my 20s of trying to get clean and going to rehab and like trying to figure it out. And at 30, I kind of hit like a different kind of spiritual bottom that I had never hit before. And really understood that if I didn't get this now, that I wasn't going to make it. Like right. I knew that. So yeah, now I'm 41.
Wow.
and I spent the last decade of my life, like figuring out who I was. And like, more importantly than that, being okay with who that girl was.
Mm-hmm.
'Cause I haven't acted in a long time. I just started acting again. And I had to like be okay that my identity wasn't about being famous anymore or this or that. And that I had to learn how to trust people that they really liked me for who I was. And, you know, and I finally figured out kind of how to forgive the girl that was in her 20s that was just doing the best that she could.
Yeah.
Without having really had proper guidance or structure, and like forgive that girl and tell her that it was okay, so that this woman could keep going, you know?
What an inspirational story. I mean, you know, we talk about it even on a very, on a such a minor little superficial level that none of us have any real like style or fashion sense, because from the time we were young, we just handed that over to somebody else and just said, okay, you tell me what to wear and you tell me what's fashionable. You tell me what's in. And I'm listening to your story, and what I'm realizing and thinking about is that for child actors, you hand over so much of your identity to other people. You tell me who I am. You tell me what box I check. You tell me what, and because the roles that I'm booking must say something about who I am. And so it's so, that can be something that is depending on which boxes people tell you you're checking. You know, you can't expect an 11-year-old to have a sense of identity or a sense of self. You know, you haven't had a chance to develop that yet. And so for you to have spent all of your teens being told who you were, and to be feeling like, I reject some of that, but I don't know how to process it. And then to really, you know, it makes sense that for so many people, you deal with it by self-medicating.
100%.
I think there's also something to chasing the rush. You know, you're on stage one night in front of an audience and you're popular and important and it matters. And then the next day the show is canceled and it's gone.
Right.
And for some people, they never get that rush back. So they look for it other places. Mm-hmm. You know, it's that I always said that being in front of the audience was quote unquote like my drug. You get this rush from being there, from the feeling of being important, how fake it is, whether it's real or not. It's real to you. And all of a sudden it's gone one day, and you do what you can to chase it for some people. So it's, I mean, that being said, we also have to acknowledge that there's, you know, millions of people out there that struggle with addiction that aren't in the entertainment industry.
Yeah.
I know, you know, one of my oldest friends, I lost to heroin overdose six years ago, and it's hard to pull out of, and you watch the decline, and it's just to see how well you're doing now. I mean, I've seen the descent. So to see somebody kind of pull out of it and have the life that you do is really a testament, because you're right. There isn't enough said about the people that can pull themselves out of it. But that being said, that's a small percentage of people that do. I mean, the recidivism rate for especially heroin addiction is brutal.
You're right.
So that's a testament to you as well, to the strength you found to be able to pull yourself out of that.
Thank you. Yeah. And I think that I, you know, probably started suffering with mental health issues that were undiagnosed, unmedicated when I was young, like really young. I always remember like waking up feeling really heartbroken, and I couldn't quite pinpoint like what that meant when my life was so cool on the outside to like, you know, I was like, why? Yeah. I just felt things so deeply. And I was just continuously told like, you're an empath, you're a deep child, you feel an artist, you know, you feel things. And in the 90s, we didn't talk about this kind of thing the way we're able to talk about it now. And I actually work in treatment now, which is such a 180. I mean, it's like, if you would ask me at 20 years old, if this is what my life would look like, but you know, I'm a director in a drug and alcohol treatment facility. So I help getting people so into great. Treatment, you know, on a daily, if not, you know, every other day basis. And so like what Will was saying, the rate of people that make it is very, very low. And so I guess it kind of poses the question to those of us who have been blessed and graced enough to like make it through that type of a chapter in our lives. Like, how do you maintain that then? Like, how do you make sure? And I think for me, the secret to the success of it, you know, a lot of people obviously want to ask me like, well, how do you do it? Like, how do I do it? Like, what should I do? And I think the best thing that's worked for me, because my whole life has been spent thinking about me. All I do is think about me, right? Like, how did that make me feel? Like, how do I look? Like, what's going on with me? Right. What's my next move and all of that? And the second I like let all of that go, and I really understood the concept of the more I think about you, the less I think about me.
Right.
Like, everything changed for me. you know, and to lead with a heart of service and to go out into the world and be of service in whatever ways you can be. And there's a million ways to do it. Sometimes it's just picking up the phone when a friend needs your help. Will like continue to sustain that type of like a spiritual levity, so to speak, and like pay back kind of the karma of like all the things I did when I was in my 20s. And so anyway, yeah, I listened to the episode you guys did with Danny, and it really I could get emotional thinking about it, because I really just understood, like I felt that on a very deep level. And I thought that was really brave, like how open he was about it. And I think mm-hmm. that the more open we can be and the more conversations we can have like this, especially for those of us who people have watched our whole lives, right? Yeah. Like I still have fans that are like, I've been, you know, I had your AOL. What I mean, I'm like, right. what? You know, and
first of all, easy. I'm still AOL.
It's he still my uses his AOL guy, account.
So let's yeah. be careful sorry. With what we're gonna say.
Sorry, I've been watching from like that long, you know, right. and so although it has been made very, very shameful thing, it's not. It's really mm. not. Like, let's just talk about it. You know, we right. all. Everybody yeah. has something. You know, that's why
nothing, almost nothing helps more than talking about it. Just nothing. Talking about it, because you invariably find half of the people you're talking to deal with something as well. Right. And there's just that safety in knowing you're not alone.
That's right.
That's kind of can help to start the process. So, yeah, anytime you talk about it, it yeah. makes it better. It really does.
It does. Yeah.
I want to just really briefly touch on the fact, because it's something a few of our guests have mentioned, but we've never really dived too deeply into it. What was the situation with your finances then at 18? How you very casually mentioned that your mom stole all your money. What was that situation?
So
this happens way more than
I know.
Like, more.
We've had a lot of guests on air, but also off air talk about this.
Yes.
Like, we know a ton
so
of people.
Many actors. Yeah.
So many. It is a common story yeah.
common.
With child actors, unfortunately.
And it's also like
that this happens.
Incredible that the parents figure out how to do this also. But so we were from New York. We moved out here to do that show, Billy. And I think my mom realized very quickly, like how much actors get taxed when she heard how much I was going to make per episode and then saw the checks. And she was like, what the hell? So she incorporated me at mm-hmm. like 10 years old. So I became a 1099 as opposed to Natanya Ross, and all mm-hmm. SAG checks went to
corporation.
Named it Red Hair, Blue Eyes. Like, I want to die inside every time I say that out loud. So everything went to Red Hair, Blue Eyes. Wow.
Right. Yeah. And it's not taxed. It goes basically,
well,
I mean, a little bit.
Yeah. It's
corporate
it's
tax
yeah. through a corporation. So it's
yeah.
a lot better.
You're taxed at the end of the year. It's a whole different
yeah.
thing.
It's
yeah.
a different
yeah.
thing. And yeah. because I was a minor, I couldn't be an officer of the company. So my mom was able to make herself president, vice president, secretary, this, that,
right.
and pay herself a salary. So until I turned about 20, actually, I was the sole breadwinner of the family. So there's that aspect where I'm paying all the bills, all the this, all the that. And then like beyond, right? Like there's facelifts happening and there's nails getting done. And there's all that kind of stuff. But I'm not, you know, I'm a kid and I think I'm like a multi.
Right. You have no idea. I used to jokingly say, oh, I know I make money. It's just somewhere else. I never saw it.
Exactly. So then I turn 18 and I got everything that was in the Coogan account. Because remember, I started acting at 6 months old. So there was a decent amount there, but there was a lot more. And it was very.
Well, the Coogan account is
25%? 25%, yeah.
Is it 25? I thought it was.
I think it's
whatever it is.
15?
Yeah.
15, 25?
15, 15,
I think at some point it became 25, but originally it may have been 15.
Maybe it started as 15. Yeah. Okay, yeah.
But remember, too, once I turned 10 years old, nothing else was taken
right.
for the Coogan account because I was now
because you were now incorporated.
So Alex Mack, all the big ones, that nothing went into the Coogan account. So I turn 18 and now it becomes very easy to tell me like, well, I'm not giving you any money. You have a drug problem. Very easy. And then it's like, well, I need some money to like get help for this drug problem. And it's like, all right. I mean, I guess we could try and move it. And then, you know, I went to rehab and I was desperate. You know, I was a young kid who was very aware that I had a major issue already at like 22 years old. And it had just been a few years before that I was acting and I was working actor all the time, never stopping. And So I was like, this is it. I'm going to try and fix this right now so I can get my life back. And, you know, when you're in a situation like that, you're very vulnerable and people all of a sudden start to have power over you. And I was told that I could get the help that I needed if I signed a power of attorney.
Oh no.
So I did, yeah. You know, and, while I was that rehab stint, while I was in the house I had helped buy for my mom, all of the stuff was no longer belonged to me. So throughout that decade, and I'm sure a lot of that goes into like why I had to just keep numbing myself to the point of like not even being able to think. So yeah, I mean, that was the situation. And then, you know, years later, I'd be like, hey, let me get that money. And it's like, oh, I don't know what money you're talking. You didn't make as much as you thought. And it was just like a series of gaslights that just got to the point where, you know, even the residuals, I would go in this really weird downward spiral where I would say, hey, can I get some of my residuals? Oh, you haven't gotten any residuals. I would call SAG and they'll list for you the last 20 you got with the amounts. And I would write everything down and take it back. She's like, I don't know. And I couldn't take it anymore. And when I got sober at 30, like for real got sober at 30, I had to make the decision that if I held on to that for one more second, it's like me drinking poison and expecting someone else to die.
Right.
Right. Wow. And for whatever reason, if she needed it that bad, she can have it. You know, she can have it. It's crazy. Me and my now husband, but when he was my boyfriend, we moved into this apartment. And I think it was like the first time I had done a change of address in forever, like a real proper change of address. And all of a sudden, all these residual checks started coming in. Boy Meets World being one of the best, actually.
Wow.
And they just started rolling in. And I was like, well, look at that.
Right.
You know? Yeah. It's crazy. But the lesson it taught me too, and it's probably made me very irresponsible with money, to be honest, because I just don't care about it. Because I just can't ever have it like be this thing in my life anymore where I'm so like, oh my God, who's doing, you know, I'm just like, who, you want money? You can have it. Yeah, let's go. Let's go on this vacation. Like, who cares? Let's just live and have fun and not worry about money. So in that sense, I think it's done. It's a little irresponsible of me at times for sure. But also, you know, it's taught me that the value of what money actually means.
Yeah.
And to me, it means, you know, fractured relationships.
Right.
So it's different for me than it is for most people. But that, yeah, that's my story. It's really crazy. To think about it, you know, now as an adult of like just how much young child actors get taken advantage of. And unfortunately, some of us by our own family.
Natanya, I want you to know that like hearing you talk about all of that and the way, you know, I just want you to know that one of the things I'm taking away from your experience is that money comes and money goes, and it in your life has not at all represented success. You are such a success.
Yeah.
And you are so inspirational. And whether when the money has been there, when the money has not been there, it has had no bearing on you turning out to be the wonderful and amazing person that you are. And so that real, like you can frame it however you want, but like I'm looking at it and I say, you don't have to have a chokehold on it because ultimately it hasn't been what you've had to base your life on. And I'm so proud of you and I'm so inspired by you. And I'm so grateful that you came and shared your experiences here with us. Yeah. And thank you also for all the work you do with other people who are in, you know, the same shoes you were in more than a decade ago, and for leading with that heart of service that you do and the impact that you make on people. Because no matter how many times people come up to you and remember you from Boy Meets World or Alex Mack or Munchie or whatever it is.
Munchie too.
The real, like your real impact is going to be with those people whose lives you have absolutely changed.
Definitely. Yeah.
Yeah.
And just thank you so much for being here with us.
Thank you. This was awesome. So fun.
So much fun. I'm bummed I wasn't in that Albuquerque. I wasn't at that Albuquerque con, but I hope
I'll bring you to the next one if you want.
Send me the dates, baby. Let's go.
It was a genuinely good time. It was like
it was fun.
It was a pretty empty con, so we just all got to hang out.
Yeah. We were just all hanging out, throwing paper planes across the thing at each other, and
the Sandlot guys are a crazy bunch. So it was really funny to be like to witness their dynamic. And like, I know Natanya, you've been around them for a while because you know Marty. Yeah. It's just like, oh, this is a fun. It's a whole scene.
Yeah.
Well, I want to be at the next one. So thank you again, Natanya. It was really wonderful talking to you and catching up. And I hope to see you again soon.
Me too.
Thanks, Natanya. Great to see you.
Thanks, Natanya. Bye.
Bye.
Wow. What a life. What a story.
It's the thing that amazes me is it would be so easy to be horribly bitter.
Right.
I know.
About everything you've been through. Like every, this business was horrible. My family was horrible. My addiction was horrible. And instead, she turned it all around and was like, no, I'm just going to help other people.
She is so, and she's like, I mean, when we saw her at the con, she just walked right up to us and gave us a big hug and has like nothing but positive and just wants to know about our life. And she's so kind. And she's not bitter. She's not cynical.
No.
And she's not even against like, it's so impressive that she doesn't even blame the industry or child actordom, you know, because that could easily be one source of like, well, then everything's a problem, you know. And she's like, no, she wants to get back into acting. She's acting and can talk about it so positively. It's like, that's really awesome.
Hugely inspirational. Yeah, it really is. It's just, it's really incredible. It really is. But man, having your money stolen from your family is just a story we keep hearing over and
I know.
Yeah. Over I mean, again. I think what unfortunately happens is like if a kid is talented, right, whether that be acting or
sports
whatever, right? Yeah. That can become just an escape valve for a parent, you know, like, I can make my entire life better by this kid. And you know, like I remember too, like there's this pattern and I'm not sure this is Natanya's pattern at all, but there was also a pattern that I remember. There was a lot of moms in particular who basically were using their kid as a child actor to get a divorce. Like, do you guys remember that? It would be like somebody who's like, oh, I've left, they moved to LA from wherever they are with their kid to get away from their husband. And it was just like a way to sort of slowly, you know, break up with their partner. But it became like, oh, I'm here to support my kid's career. But in reality, it was like, well, you're going through your own stuff. And your kid's acting career is just an excuse for you to break away and like start your own life. I hope that happens less, because I remember that was like at the Oakwoods, there would be all these moms, you'd be like, when was the last time you saw your husband?
Right.
Whole, it's so strange. It all just kinds of, we've talked about nature versus nurture on this podcast a lot, and it all seems to kind of come down to the home you grew up in, how you were raised, what you were raised around, who you were raised by. I mean, it makes a huge difference. It really does. So I don't know.
Well, I'm glad I asked her about that, because like I said, we've had a few people like allude to it or mention it. And then we've never really spent the time actually talking about how that happens. And man, isn't that crazy too? That just like the change of address and then all of a sudden the checks started coming to her.
Start rolling in. It's pretty incredible.
Yeah. Well, thank you all for joining us for this episode of Pod Meets World. As always, you can follow us on Instagram, Pod Meets World Show. You can send us your emails, podmeetsworldshow@gmail.com. And we have merch.
Merch 2, Back in Time, or whatever that movie was called that she was in.
Merch 2 Strikes
Merchy
Back.
Merchy 2 Strikes Back. That's what it is. Yes.
And last but most certainly not least, if you are looking for help with addiction, there is confidential, free help to find treatment and information at 1-800-662-4357. Writer, send us out.
We love you all.
Pod dismissed.
Pod Meets World is an iHeart podcast produced and hosted by Danielle Fishel, Will Friedle, and Ryder Strong. Executive producers, Jensen Karp and Amy Sugarman. Executive in charge of production, Danielle Romo. Producer and editor, Tara Sudbach. Producer, Jackie Rodriguez. Engineer and Boy Meets World superfan, Easton Allen. Our theme song is by Kyle Morton of Typhoon. You can follow us on Instagram at Pod Meets World Show or send us an email at podmeetsworldshow@gmail.com.
This episode is brought to you by Huggies Little Movers.
Listen, Huggies knows that babies come in all shapes and sizes, and so do their tushies.
Especially when they start really moving.
With Huggies Little Movers, you get their best-fitting diaper with its curved and stretchy fit.
That's right. So no matter what kind of mover you've got, they'll feel protected and comfy while their little tushy wiggles and jiggles all around.
Huggies Little Movers has curves designed to fit all baby curves,
and helps provide up to 12-hour protection against leaks.
So, make the switch to Huggies Little Movers today.
We got you, baby.
When it comes to Pod Meets World, we're synonymous with two things. Watching our younger selves on a TV show from 30 years ago and loving Hyundai.
The first ever fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5.
With up to 303-mile range, available two-way charging, and other category-defining features, the fully electric Hyundai Ioniq 5 is one of the most teched-out electric vehicles ever.
And as you know, we are tech heads.
The standard ultra-fast charging capability gives you an 80% charge in just 18 minutes when using a 250-plus kilowatt DC fast charger.
And with the available two-way charging, you can charge larger electronic equipment inside and outside the car, backyard or side yard.
Hyundai, it's your journey. Learn more at HyundaiUSA.com.
Call 562-314-4603 for complete details. 2024 Ioniq 5 rear-wheel drive has an EPA estimated driving range of up to 303 miles. Actual range will vary with options, driving conditions and habits, vehicle and batteries condition, and other factors. Available in limited quantities and select states only.
I am happy to announce that Target Circle, the program we all know and love, now has automatic deals.
And with the all-new Target Circle being free to join, there has never been an easier way to take advantage of the most deals at Target.
When you shop in-store or online, Target Circle deals will be automatically applied at checkout, so you get the savings without lifting a finger.
And right now, you can sign up for Target Circle 360, which offers unlimited same-day delivery for just $49 for the first year of membership.
That's $50 off the regular price.
And when you pay with your Target Circle card, you can save an extra 5% your way every day.
Visit target.com/circle or the Target app for more details.
Same-day delivery is subject to terms. Applies to orders over $35.
For 5% discount, restrictions apply. See program rules in-store or at target.com/circle card.